Pegamos também.
Now what we're gonna do, we going again to go province by province. Let me just use the document first so that we don't get confused, so that we don't think go back and try. Let's just use the document. But then if members have the submissions from the provinces and they see that there are issues that have not been responded to, they can raise those issues so that they respond to those. Do we have the follow-up after? Do we have the document?
I don't have the book.
You don't have? There are documents in front. Can you ask it, Mr. Erasmus? It's only for the reform, but you got the you have the response from the department. from the provinces, from
yeah.
the everybody.
Yeah.
But also you must have in front of you the bill as well, B38B 2015. Also, decided to also bring the principal act as well, so that the thing as well. You do have the technology for money. Remember, as I said, that you must have the thesis, B38B, but you must also have the B38, which is the original thing from the number one, according to the document, is the Western Key. The proposal that the President should take concurrence from the provincial authority before implementation of the economic provinces. The relevant clause is the section 32 in brackets of the Act.
Chairperson, on the point of procedure,
yeah.
I thought that the process that we follow in that is that we are supposed to have public hearings and for the provinces to report to us on those public hearings. Next thing we have is not a public hearing.
No, that was clarified last week by the department, national department, that there were public hearings. They confirmed last week. Initially, there was actually a session that there were no public hearings in the Western Cape. But we had no one from members to confirm that. But then the department confirmed. Maybe let me give the department again to confirm whether they had the public hearings or not.
Good morning, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Indeed, we confirmed that. The department and the APTIA have supported the province in the holding of the public hearing. At the conclusion, I think the committee had expressed their dissatisfaction that the Western Cape did not include in their report about those public hearings, but in fact they did have it.
Clarified. Thank you. So, I think to say, Thomas, that I won't read this proposal, but we should rather focus on the responses and see whether we agree with the responsive, and also see whether we should change or amend the bill, or we retain what is contained in the bill. That's from the national assembly. So that is going to be the process. So I'm not going to, because it's going to take longer if I read close by close in terms of what the provinces are saying. Like who is doing it with the agency who would say close 7 without necessarily reading, and then would ask the department to respond to that close 7 and then check with their members if they are persuaded by the agency or they want to retain what is contained in the bill. So we'll use the same approach. So with this one, with the response, are we retaining what is in the bill, or we want to include what the Western Cape is saying? Remember? So I'm not going to read what is in the bill. We're just on Western Cape on one. I just read that the president, blah, 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 and then the response of the department is regarding that. So what I'm asking is, are we amending based on what the Western Cape is suggesting, or we retaining after the clarification by the department? Honorable Makhumus, you also have a right to participate. This is actually your meeting. Honorable
Thank you, Chair. If you would allow me just to respond to the Section 32.2, not to the clause speaking. Section 32.2, Chair, I think that we can accept that although this is a 76 bill, there is no law that compels the president. We, for example, know that my province, Chair, has also looked at the Gauteng, and we make amendments. We are at liberty to do that. But the final decision on the promulgation doesn't need to pass with the president. Thank you, Chair.
So, we're not making any amendments in regard to that Section 32. Okay. The next one is clause 18. This clause is also under 32. That's what it's called. It's good. It's a clarify this, this clause 18 with that.
Thank you,
Chairman.
Could you please indulge me for our apology?
Yes.
As per commitment that we have made, I do want to confirm that the email was actually sent on Friday, albeit it was late. If you see, Chairperson, we sent it on Friday at 7:03 at night. Yes, indeed, we were still working at that time. So I do apologize that it came late, even though we did send it on Friday as we had committed. But our apologies that the committee did not receive it well ahead of time. On clause number 18, Chairperson, the concern that has been raised is, given that at the moment the local authorities are the ones that issue outstanding traffic fines, and the revenue that is generated goes to them. Now, with the declaration of the provincial authorities as issuing authorities, then it means the local municipalities are going to lose the revenue. We hereby give confirmation that nobody is going to lose any revenue, because the revenue after being collected is always going to be dispersed to the issuing authorities that originated the notice. So if you take, for example, in the municipality here in Cape Town, if the provincial administration issues an outstanding traffic fine, when it gets paid, that revenue will go to the province. If it is the municipality that issues that fine, when it's collected, it is the municipality that will be able to get it. So there is no authority that will be losing any revenue. And it's not a new inclusion, it is just mere confirmation of what is already contained in Section 32 of the Principal Act, similar to what it is in terms of the amendment being checked. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair, just looking at the bill of the year 38B, can we ask our parliamentary legal advisor to help us there, Chair? Because I think where Western Cape is coming from is when we look at the definitions in the bill and we look at 1C. In 1C, there's a definition of authority. And in that instance, authority means the RTIA established in terms of Section 3. Now, I think that's where the problem comes in. That I hear what you are saying, sir, through you, Chair, with irreversible authority. But in the definition there, authority is confined to refer to the RTIA.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Member, thank you very much for that. The clarification that is required is... Oh,
okay.
My apologies. My apologies, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the correction. The definition, yes, indeed, clear authority becomes authority with a capital A that refers to the RTIA. The issuing authority in respect of the clarification for this question relates to the local authorities as well as the provincial administration. But with respect to the RTIA that becomes now the authority, the RTIA, when an infringement notice has been issued, the revenue that is collected is always in the first instance going to be given to the local authority that has issued it. So in respect of the revenue, the local authorities will not lose anything going to the authority or being the RTIA.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to everyone. Yes, Chair, to answer the question from the member, there's also a definition of issuing authority also in the Act, which is on page 3 in 1H. Which defines what an issuing authority is. But I understand where the confusion is coming from, because the explanation from the RTIA just says authority is sort of saying the manner will go back to the issuing authority. Thank you, Chair.
Let me give you this opportunity just to go through this rather than going there so that we clarify the next one.
Okay.
Yeah. Just take us through the document.
Thank you, Chairperson. The next issue is on clause 15 in respect of the appeals and the reviews. And the issue that the Western Cape is raising is whether the tribunal will have the related capacity to be able to deal with those infringement notices. And here the clarification that we provide is the very fact that the tribunal only comes at the very end of the process. And it is not just a decision that has been made in isolation. We have used the statistical base of implementation to inform the projections that have been made. Indeed, as the Western Cape was saying, there are millions of traffic fines that have been issued. We recognize that. And we have done a statistical analysis, taking into consideration the implementation in Gauteng for the 2015-16 financial year as well as 16-17 financial year, right up to this previous financial year, 17-18. In total, it is more than 12 million infringement notices that have been issued. From those 12 million infringement notices, it is less than 5% of those notices that result in an infringer submitting a representation. Being less than 5% of those representations, about 43% of those representations have been unsuccessful. And this is where the infringement appeals tribunal will come in, because infringers will then want to review or to appeal the negative decision that has been made by the representation officer. So the infringement appeals tribunal works on a restricted base after all the processes have been followed. And the percentage of those notices at the moment, based on the statistical information of less than 5% of the representation application, automatically means you'll be looking at less than 2.5% of all the notices that will be issued that may result in a possibility of them being appealed or subjected to a review. On that basis, we feel, Chairperson, there is no need to have any worries. The projections that have been made will automatically be able to cover and deal with all these representations that will be challenged and subjected to a review or appeal process.
Honourable Member, any comments on the clause 15? Or we agree with the clarification and therefore not supporting the proposal from the committee? Okay, and next one?
Thank you, Chairperson. The next one relates to clause number 13, in particular also section 24 and 29 of the Act that deals with the categorization of offences and infringement. And the suggestion here is legislation should therefore be coupled with harsher consequences for driving without a driving license. We agree with the proposal. And to that extent, the decision that we emphasize has already been made. The categorization of infringement and offenses are contained in the supporting regulations, Schedule 3 of those regulations that details the category thereof, the applicable demerit points, the financial values, and the interaction with the various clauses in the legislative framework. We confirm there will indeed be harsher consequences in respect of somebody that is driving without a driving license. However, we confirm again, Chairperson, that there is no need to make any changes in the basis itself, because that is something that is covered in the regulations themselves.
Comments, members? So no changes. Okay. Thank you. Next one.
Thank you, Chairperson. The next one relates to the demerit points on clause number 7. And the proposal is that the manner in which demerit point position is ascertained must be retained. Here we emphasize that the whole intention is for the bill to always comprise of the principles that must be emphasized, and the operational mechanisms will be dealt with in terms of the regulations. And this part, in essence, will be retained in the regulation, not in the Act, because the regulations are as detailed as possible and include how one will be able to access the records in respect of the demerit points and the interchangeability thereof. So we know and we confirm this is something that is dealt in the supporting regulations themselves. Regulation 24 in particular, it is not something that is new. Regulation 24 of the Act of Regulations 2008 already deals with this aspect, Chairperson.
We actually dealt with the Eastern Cape, with all the clauses from the Eastern Cape, but we did indicate that when you report in writing, you should also respond to the clauses from the Eastern Cape of the province. But now we don't have to take us through. That's for record purposes. So we should then go to the next clause.
The next province, Honourable Chairperson, is on page number 10, the contribution coming from the province of Gauteng. The first one is with respect to clause number 1F on the definition of a visual infringer to exclude operator and a juristic person. Here, Chairperson, we do not support the proposal, because when we're dealing with the definition of an infringer, I just want to emphasize that in respect of the ARTO, there are two types of infringement. Vehicle-related infringement, who are going to be dealt with by the owner of the vehicle. Now, the owner of the vehicle can either be a person, or it could be a business, a company, or an operator. Then there are driver-related infringement. Those infringements that in the main had been committed by somebody physically taking charge of the vehicle, such as speeding, excessive speeding. If we exclude operators and juristic persons, then the chairperson, we will be creating a terrible gap, because operators and juristic people are owners of vehicles, and they would then be subjected to vehicle-related violations. In the main, those are infringements such as the ones that relate to the roadworthiness of the vehicle, because an owner of a vehicle has the responsibility to make sure that a vehicle that is set onto a public road network must always be in a roadworthy condition. Thus, we provide that clarification. Yes, we do not support the proposal to exclude them. It will leave a terrible gap, Chairman.
But the section itself talks about habitual infringer, but it doesn't distinguish between the person who's an operator or specific person and the person, like you're explaining now. For example, if I'm a taxi operator, then I employ a taxi driver, and then he infringes in the form of driving excessively. So, but then I don't know whether an operator, and then for some reason I terminate the contract of the driver or whatever. Who's going to take responsibility now for that? Because it's not clarified in the act. Just talk about habitual in this section that they're helping. So you must take out the operator in the touristic sector.
Chair, just a point of correction. Cartagena is not saying take it out.
It does.
No.
No, if you go to their original submission, it is in bracket. So in terms of what is in bracket, it means that you must take it out.
No, Chair. Then we merely done it wrong. What we're trying to do there, Chair, is to say that the infringer is not qualified, and we want to say that the operator and the juristic person must also be within that category of infringers. That's what we're trying to say, Chair. We did it wrong. That's why we put it in bold.
That's my understanding. I'm sure that's actually understanding as well. That's why they're responding to this question. Because how can we take out the operator and the tourist person so that they are not liable? So that's why it's exactly. So if you look at the bill, one of the members, if you look at the bill, the second part of the bill, on top there, it clarifies what it says, another explanatory note. It says, where in bold type, in square brackets, indicate omission from existing enactment. So meaning that you delete what is in the bill. That's what it means. And then the bold line, where underlined with a solid line indicating firstly in existing enactment. So therefore, if you I have this, all the submissions from provinces, let me just read what Kaltien is saying quickly before I allow legal services to advise us on this. It says habitual infringer means an infringer, and then in brackets and square bold, this is what it says you must take out, because the bill as it is proposed, it includes operator or a juristic person. So how can they take out, and so therefore what how can it proposing that it says habitual infringer means an infringer who in terms of Section 25. Are we together? clarify the, so that it's not just the reminded of today.
What you're saying, Chair, is correct. As you are explaining, what is bold and in square brackets in the bill, we are removing that. That is the proposal that does not be deleted from the existing Act. And whatever is underlined, then that is a new exception to the existing Act.
Okay, now that is clarified. So what, therefore, Captain is proposing is that it must simply take out operator or juristic person, so that then it is read as habitual infringer means an infringer who, in terms of Section 25, incurs the merit point resulting in disqualification more than 2 times. But then you were to respond to that, because the Act doesn't then clarify whether this person who, was driving excessively, who is going to be liable. I know also, we welcome the taxi, Mr. Williams, but I know when you will, they also had a submission that was attached to KZN submission. They are also saying in principle they support the deal, but they also have a problem with this issue of the operator and juristic testing. But I'm also having a problem with that as well. I don't have the taxi, but I can't be liable for if my car is driven by another person. Now I'm liable for that. But we were trying to clarify verbally. But then in the Act, it's not the way that you're explaining it verbally.
Thank you, Chairperson. The answer lies in what I have already indicated in terms of the categorization of violations. At any given point in time, if I am a taxi driver employed by the operator or the owner of the taxi, I will personally always be responsible for driver-related infringement, meaning for anything that goes to the manner in which I drive, reckless driving, going over barrier lines, excessive speeding. You, as the owner of the taxi, have got nobody whatsoever. You don't get involved because it is not you that was driving the vehicle. Again, this confirmation is further found in Section 17.1 of the Act in itself that tabulates the various elective options that an infringer has. One of those is if you are the owner of the vehicle, and you get information about a driver-related infringement, one of the options is to identify, by nominating the driver, identify the person that was responsible for the vehicle at the time that the infringement was committed. So, in short, to answer your question, Chairperson, operators of taxis, owners, will never be held accountable for infringement committed by the driver. Similarly, the driver is not responsible for infringements that are committed by the owner, such as the roadworthiness of a motor vehicle. There are two distinct types of infringement. Even the citation forms themselves are specified according to the category and the role that one plays in terms of the interrelationship and the ownership of the vehicle.
I think
the response provided makes sense. Yeah.
Yes. Perhaps one, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. The next one on clause number 13 says Schedule 3 to categorize driving while disqualified or with suspended driving license as an offense. We have a grade similar to the submission by the Eastern Cape, and this will be amended in schedule number 3 of the regulations that support it. So we do concur with something that we need to be able to beef it up and make it a more serious violation in that respect.
Does it make any sense on the Act itself?
No, Chairman. There is no change.
Oh, are you raising your hand? Paul, or any comments?
No.
Welcome.
Yeah,
thank you, gentlemen. The next one goes to the relates to the service of documents, the relevant clause 16A1. The proposal that the manner of service should include registered mail and any kind of confirmation of electronic communication. That we have confirmed in the previous deliberations, where we also made example of the various types of services that we confirmed. For example, SMS will be used as a means to communicate and bring to the attention of infringer that a particular notice has been sent. But SMS itself is not a method of actually doing the service. And the electronic platforms that are going to be used, new technological developments are so advanced that there is always going to be certified confirmation that includes the embedded date stamps that can indicate on such and such a date, at a particular time, using a type of platform that the service would have actually occurred. We give confirmation they will be included in the regulation. As we move on, I think it's one of the provinces that has also made submission in that respect, even from the Western Cape, we confirm that the inclusion is something that is fully compliant to the ECTA, the Electronic Communications and Transactions Act. So it will be with full compliance in that respect. In terms of the bill as it stands, there is no need to be able to make any amendments, etc.
So that the response that covers the cost will be the manner of service should include registered mail. What do you say to that?
Yes, registered mail is included.
Comments, member? Please. Next one.
Chairperson, the next clause 16B dealing with the presumption of service, in particular, the request is to have the number of days for service of documents to be presumed that it should be increased. And the majority of the cases, we're going to place the lines of electronic service of documents. And here we have made a provision that 10 days after a document has been served, it will be presumed to have been served. And the proposal is to be able to increase that 10 days perhaps to 15 or 20 days or however long. And we are saying that it is not necessary because 10 days in itself is sufficient. If I may take a practical example, Chairperson, in terms of the Act, Section 71, read together with Regulation Number 1 of the Act of Regulation 2008, upon commission of an infringement, an infringer must be served within 40 days. And after being served within 40 days, so the last date of service must be 40 days after the infringement would have been committed, you are then given a 32-day period within which to exercise one of the five elective options. That automatically takes you to a maximum of 72 days. But if you were not served personally, if service was done by any other means such as registered mail, there is an additional 10 days that are now included in that mix. So it automatically means you are now dealing with a provision of 82 days, including a 10-day presumption of service that never came. The proposal therefore says 72 days is not enough, plus the 10-day provision, which is 82 days, now we need to be able to include that. And we're saying, in essence, it will defeat the purpose of the Act, because the purpose is to ensure that you communicate and interact with people by giving them the empowerment to deal with the issues while they're still fresh in their mind. And therefore, by increasing the provision that has been made, Chairperson, we think that is unnecessary. Especially given that once you broaden up the service platform, it is not only personal and registered mail, we are including electronic platforms that will be able to serve. Documents are going to come to the infringers by the spur of the moment. And once one has been notified of that, the 10-day presumption is in itself an added luxury that has been provided. We respectfully do not think there's any need to be able to amend the bill in that respect, Chair.
We agree with the clarification. Madam Mako. Okay. The next one.
Chairperson, the next one is the composition of the tribunal in terms of clause number 15, the new edition under chapter Roman figure 4A, subsection 3, on the number of the tribunal members, and the proposal is that the tribunal should not be less than 10. We accept the proposal insofar as the number of members is concerned. However, we indicate that this decision is something that we need to be able to understand, that members are not going to be necessarily appointed on a part-time basis or on a full-time basis. This is something that is going to be informed by the observations of the impact of the implementation in itself. I take Honourable Chairperson back to the example that you have given in terms of the statistical base that shows less than 5% of all the infringement notices that have been issued over the last 3 years are the ones resulting in representation. Concomitant with that is only 40% on average of the negative decisions whereby infringers may want to subject them to either a review and appeal process. In essence, you will be dealing with less than 2.5% of the total of all the infringement notices. Whether all the tribunal members should be a total number of 10 will be sufficient, and whether they need to be operating on a full-time basis or part-time basis is something that is always automatically going to be impacted on by the nature of the operations and the volumes of transactions that will be received.
Chair,
where I find a synergy with the answer is the last phrase that you have used, which relates to the volumes of the operations. The reason why Caltech is putting full-time there is because we move from a premise that says justice delayed is justice denied. And we wouldn't want to have a situation where an infringer can now have no access to the tribunal because there's no sufficient capacity, human resource capacity in the tribunal. I don't know how we're going to accommodate that. Will it be accommodated in the recommendations as well? I don't think you write it into law necessarily. But we want the public to know that we are looking at their interest. And there is therefore a responsibility on the tribunal not to delay the delivery of justice. That's the rationale, Chair. And the explanation, and therefore in that context, makes sense, building on that last phrase.
Honourable Chair.
Chair, this is partly CEO's clarification question. The intent of the object of the deal was to reduce the burden from the judicial process, create separate dispute resolution mechanism so that people can be able to tell it. In your response, you are saying it's not. I don't know if you are saying the tribunal is going to be there or the tribunal is not going to be there, when and how, because in your response it seems not to be clear. Is the tribunal going to be there immediately when the bill has been attended to? And what is the period and how is it being done? Because in your presentation when we started with the bill, the issue of the tribunal, the mechanism, how it works was very clear. But in your response there seems to
thank you, Chairperson. The position has not changed, Honourable Member. I confirm the tribunal will be there from day number one. The comment perhaps that may seem to be contradictory, it is not. We are just emphasizing the fact that we need to be circumspect in terms of the number of the members of the tribunal being informed by the operational mechanisms and the impact of implementation. But for additional clarity, the tribunal will be there from day one. It is an added mechanism that we're giving, as Honorable Moko was saying, that we give assurance to the members of the public that government is looking after their interests. In addition, the circumspection part of it is what we are then providing on a cautionary measure that you want to be careful about how you capacitate them, because you need to have the members being there so that if the volumes are increased, the infringers are not disadvantaged at all. But at the same time, you don't want to have an overkill where you've got a lot of people that are there and not doing anything. How it will be implemented will then be dictated to in the regulations that will be able to support that.
So the status quo of the presentation remains, the issue was on the composition.
Thank you, Jeff. The next one refers to the text of referencing, whereby the suggestion is referenced that needed to be made in terms of clause number 15, section 29A5, should rather refer to subsection 6A instead of 6B. We gratefully thankful and we accept the proposal. Still on clause number 15, Chairperson, the comment is for the
member. That's on this one. That this means the change on the bill.
It is the text of, yes, text of correction in the bill.
Oh, okay. 15, 2019.
Chairperson, 2019 relates to the resignation of members of the tribunal, and the proposal is for such resignation to be in the form of a written resignation. We are thankful for that and we would accept that. The next one is a very important one, Honorable Chairperson, relating still to clause number 15, especially section 29J. The response that we're dealing with, I want to deal with it in two ways. Number one, by emphasizing that in the current setup, magistrates' courts don't have the legislative jurisdiction to deal with review applications. However, Chairperson, I would like to express our gratitude to the state law advisor as well as to the parliamentary legal advisor, because in the background we have had engagement with the view of assisting this committee in finalizing this process. So it is not only the act here in the department that says about, we have engaged with them to critically give us the analysis and see what proposals are there and how we can be able to deal with it. Let's take it that in the current setup, the magistrate court does not have the legislative jurisdiction to deal with that. I take also the comment that was emphasized by the Honorable Magwemu in the previous discussions of being circumspect to make sure that we do not place infringers under unnecessary financial burden by requiring them to launch a review or appeals through the High Court, because that can be very expensive. And the proposal that he had made was the possibility of invoking the magistracy to be able to deal with that. Now, we have seriously considered that, and that is a discussion that we're making reference to, and if it pleases Chairperson, may I just stay off it now, because then we'll deal with it more in detail in page page 8 and 9. My apologies, Chairperson. Yes, under page 8 and 9, yes, I couldn't say it immediately because 8 and 9 we had responded to the issues coming from the Eastern Cape. But if I may emphasize, here under clause number 15, where we were dealing with the review of the decisions of the tribunal. With this engagement between ourselves and the state advisor and parliamentary legal advisor, we said the election to be tried in court shouldn't be confused with the review applications. However, what we then considered was an alternative solution. And this was an alternative solution that can then be made to Section 29J in order to replace it in totality with the following new clause that is titled Judicial Review of the Decision of the Tribunal. As we emphasize, yes, we do know the magistracy does not have the legislative rights to be able to deal with this. But however, we make a special dispensation for it that would say any infringer affected by a decision of the tribunal may institute proceedings for judicial review of the said decision in any magistrate court. And that is the emphasis what Honorable Mangwebo was also saying. In the magistrate court, designated by the minister, in terms of the promotion of Administrative Justice Act 2000. And the note that we say the definition of court in the promotion of the Administrative Adjudication of Justice Act includes the magistrate's court for any district or regional division established by minister for purposes of adjudicating over civil disputes in terms of Section 2 of the Magistrates Court Act 1944. Either in general terms or in respect of a specific class of administrative action designated by the minister by notice in the Gazette and to be presided over by magistrates, an additional magistrate or a magistrate of a regional division established for the purpose of adjudicating civil cases. What we in effect are saying is we will make a special dispensation here so that you empower the magistracy to be able to deal with the review applications or appeals that come out from the infringement tribunal. Inasmuch as generally the magistrate court does not have jurisdiction, but we give them jurisdiction that is empowered by the party, as well as the magistrate court act. What we will further need to do is to have the ministries engaged so that the Minister of Justice can then specifically prescribe these as one of the methods that can be dealt with. So it is that possibility that is there that we propose that in order to address the concerns that have been raised by members and the public, this is a provision that we can then include in there.
I think that addresses the issue of the election to whether to go to court.
Not only that one, Chairperson, it will address the elections to go to court, but also address the guarantee that infringers would have in terms of challenging the decisions of the appeals tribunal. Because in terms of the Patria Act, all administrative decisions are subject to your review. As these, we recognize that it might be a terrible financial challenge to expect an ordinary person that is a clerk, it might be a taxi driver that wants to be able to subject that. You won't have the money to go to the high court. But now we say if you then introduce the magistrate's court, it becomes a better way to be able to deal with it.
Okay. I
just want to check my understanding. So you are covering the issue that was raised in the earlier comments about the provision of the budget. And I can hear clearly that you are going to that direction. But where do you fit that? Do you fit that after exhausting the tribunal part? Or do you fit that way? If, say, for instance, once I get the notification, my election is to go Why then abandon the tribunal court?
Chairperson, it comes after you've gone to the tribunal, honorable member. Within the inner mechanisms of the legislative framework, if one subjects a particular action to court, one of the first things that the court does, they want to find out if there is an internal appeals mechanism that you need to exhaust first. And only after you've exhausted that, that you feel justice has been denied, then you'll be able to do that. So, no, honorable member, it will come at the end of it, because while in the framework, to challenge any decision in respect of the citation, one can submit a representation. If the representation has failed, you have the second bite of it in the form of taking it to the infringement appeals tribunal. If that fails, you then have the added protection that is then given to the infringer so that it comes after the end of the process with the appeals tribunal.
But it's really automatic if you want to review the decision of the appeal tribunal, then it's up to you. The act doesn't have to give you that, so it's automatic. Any decision of the appeal tribunal that can be reviewed. That's before you report.
Thank you, Chairperson. The difference here, Chair. Currently, the Act provides for an election to go to court to any ordinary magistrate court. Now, an ordinary magistrate court that does not have the power to review administrative decisions. But now, the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act has, in existence, a mechanism that is already in place in terms of the law. In terms of the minister can designate the magistrate court to hear self-review of administrative action. It is an existence here. It's not something new that is being proposed in the after amendment bill. It is just invoking that provision that is already in existence in the past. Therefore, the difference here is that there's a special court, not ordinary magistrate court. Special court that is designated by the minister to hear specific issues around that is the first day I will find.
I think the point is that the Honorable Ntebe was asking that why do you have to then go through all those processes? Why don't you just if you're not satisfied, you don't have to go to the tribunal, but you just go straight to the magistrate of the tribunal. So that's very important.
That is a policy decision on the side of the department, Chair, that they decided that rather than go to the court, there should be a process that the person has to engage before actually going to the court. But Chair, the proposal is before Parliament at the moment, Chair, so the Parliament can make a decision around that issue. And I'm sure the department has a special motivation as to why they want to remove the ordinary magistrate court completely from the administrative process. Thank you,
Chair. You are the one who specified
the leak. Chair, the certification process is dealing with constitutional issues, what is the constitutional or not to do with the legal issues. The policy part of the motivations, and they are really a policy decision on the side of the investigation.
Okay.
Okay.
So thank you, Chair. Not only a policy decision, but it is also the one looks into the founding preamble to the Act. It is one of the key things that the intention of the legislature is to lessen the burden on the court by dealing with these matters administratively. It's also a decision that is informed by not only lessening the burden on the court, but it's also informed by the concomitant expertise that will be resident in a specific structure that deals with road traffic related matters. And thus, the establishment of the tribunal will be specifically focused to all the matters that deal with road safety, road traffic management, and one has got a much better chance of addressing and dealing with all the attendant issues to be able to bring justification for any claim that they want to be able to have. And the ultimate aim, yes, if they are still not pleased, you will be able to go to a magistrate court. But in the normal course of events, one can safely say, Chairperson, anyone that would have exhausted the matters within the internal structure would not have a good chance of succeeding in a normal court, because you would have taken it within an environment of expertise that deals specifically with these matters.
Can I suggest that, because you're coming now with a new clause, can I suggest that perhaps the EA can go through the department with our services and the job to perhaps have, I mean, as we start with this new clause, but then together with all the other responses, the committee secretary sends this to all members and also the provinces, so that then when we deal with the final money, we then can consider. Because it's not in front of us now, that what we're looking for. If you could get this in writing, we send it to members and the provinces, and then we consider when we deal with the final money. Can I?
You're suggesting it's tempting, but also the responses are making sense. Because they are trying to fuse in what we've been saying for a long time that is absent in the bill, which is the provision of the parliament. However, the content CEO is that I'm going back to the intent of the object of the bill, what to reduce the debt. So if we are going to designate a case, and I can tell you that not every court will be able to deal with this matter. So the Justice Minister must be able to designate certain courts to deal with this matter. If you look at the equality matter right now, designated courts are grappling to deal with it. Please look at that and say, if we are going to designate also courts that are going to be dealing with this matter, are we not going to be able to close the loop on the issues that we also wanted to take away from? So it's making sense, Chair, but I think I'm also tempted to agree to the suggestion, because we are trying to bring together the combination of what was absent in the bill in the first place, between which is now giving provision to the election of the service. So if they agree, the state law advisor is the leadership can send us some snippets of what they think should be done, and we'll take it from
there. Let's do that, so that when we consider, we also consider the issues that we raised in the of practical implementation of this new clause as well. Honorable Makue.
I handled this before my chair, but I saw it was in a dark spot. I can go before.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. What next? And who else?
Who is this head?
No, I just want to know the head. That's it. You go ahead, what's up? Okay, you can go another one, and then another one.
Chair, thank you very much. I'm going to try and make the 3 points quickly. The first one is on the proposal that you're making. Maybe lost, Chair, but I thought that formulation that you're looking for is contained on page 8 and 9. The two teams has already looked at that, the legal experts. So we have it there, Chair.
But that's not the responsibility.
Yeah. That being said, Chairperson, I think the procedure also does not make it necessary for us to go back to the provinces. We make the amendment and we send it to the NA, and then it can be finalized. But I think without undermining the provinces' chair, having read the responses from the provinces, emanating from the public hearings, many of the provinces have the same issue that they wanted to raise with us. So I think they would be happy that we're actually responding to them. That's my point number one, Chair. My point number two goes back to the original thing here, which is the fact that we are saying that infringers should have the right to a review. And that is being addressed by us saying that they don't necessarily incur the higher cost by having to go to a higher court. They can go to a magistrate's court. With the formulation, we are addressing that, Chair. This, the final point that we're trying to make, Chair, is to say that the problem that we have is that this legislation is new. And anything that's new comes along with its uncertainties. And towards the end of our deliberations today, we may want to make some very clear proposals to the RTIA in terms of what necessarily needs to be done. Because if we look at the meeting that was held last week by the portfolio committees on police and the portfolio committees on transport, many of the taxi associations there was complaining about our communication not being good enough. And we know that many of the road users are taxis, and therefore I would say that we need to look, and when I make the proposal later on, also at that proposal within the light of saying that more awareness needs to be transferred to the users of these vehicles, so that people are not penalized because they don't know. We know that's not an excuse in law, but we don't want to introduce law to penalize people. We want to introduce law to save casualties and lives. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you, Chair. My piece was in fact to work on the internet right through the anticipated. You know, sometimes we tend to speculate at home. And when we pass the bill, later on we notice the unintended consequences of that. As much as we want to address one issue, say the issue that the capacity and the time that it was confronted with the study of time. My concern is with regards to the role that the person of justice has played for this process, myself in the conduct, because the key stakeholder here. In the previous trust and against the Department of Cars after during the implementation, the time of implementation, very number of issues. You see, the time of this bill was rushed, it was not proper consultation, internal response to the sector department. I'm sitting here asking myself where are these things that support my safety role. Can you clarify them? I'm tempted to rephrase what you have raised in the department and the state of the advisors and in Parliament with regards to maybe we should also include the Department of Justice in both so that we should find comfort when we appeal on the sacrifice and voters of important and brilliant, particularly the Department of Justice, they create brilliant intent. It will be most of the time be subject to unintended consequences, whether it's a better regulation or not. Thank you.
So what is the way for what is the law? Are we accepting the new growth?
I want to show proposed, Chair.
Okay. So the next one.
Thank you, Chair. We go back now to page 12. page 12, clause number 15, section 29H1. The suggestion there was to have a tribunal in each province. We give confirmation, Chair, that the tribunal will be serving all the provinces. Also, we go back onto the comments that we have made in terms of the advice and the decisions that we make that are going to be informed by the volumes. We want to emphasize again, for clarity, Chairperson, that in the main, what the tribunal will be dealing with is actually going to be the least number of applications or infringement, given that the actual process itself is a very interactive process. And the infringer has the right and they engage with the process every step of the way. Because the first time, they would have engaged with the representation officers in the RTIA. If they do not succeed, that is the time that their matters get elevated and then they will apply to the infringement appeals tribunal. In the main, we said it's less than 5% of applications that go to representation. From that 5%, about 40% of those are the ones that come unsuccessful. So it's from that 40% that infringers would want to challenge further by taking them through to the infringement appeals tribunal. So you're looking at a very small percentage in respect of that. Nonetheless, it is a constitutional guarantee. It is what has now been included in this. So it's important that we have a contextual understanding to what we are then requesting when we give assurance that the tribunal will be in a position to adequately serve each and every one of the provinces in order to ensure that the infringers and members of the public get adequate service there. If there is any need for an increment in respect of the tribunal and in respect of its sitting, that is going to be informed by the operational implications there, Chairperson.
So we are free with that clarification. Okay. Next one.
Thank you, Chairperson. The next comment, still on the tribunal, is an emphasis that the tribunal should be completely independent of the RTIA so that they will be in a position to make unfettered decisions. We give that confirmation that it is, in fact, by the very nature that the RTIA will not be controlling the tribunal. The tribunal, like all other tribunals, will be appointed by the president, and we give confirmation that it is the department that will be providing the related budgetary provision for it. So the RTIA is not going to be in control of it, and we concur with the assurance that is requested by the province. We give that assurance that the tribunal will be independent. To that extent, Chairperson, we move there is no need to effect any amendment on this.
Normally, the people that are appointed by the president, the recommendation usually comes from the department. The president actually appoints what is recommended by the department. So what's going to be the situation?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. In this respect, the proposal is their independence from the RTIA, and the RTIA will not be involved in that process. If we recall in terms of section 29 from C until H, it is a ministerial process that will involve the minister, and for supporting it is going to be the Department of Transport. The RTIA is not going to be involved in that process whatsoever. Because in any case, they will be reviewing the decisions that have been made by representation officers employed by the RTIA. So we can confirm we will be completely independent from the identification or recruitment of all those people when the minister undertakes the administrative process to request the president. This is way above us. We are just the minnows.
Well, No, RCA is an entity of the party. In fact, even now, it's the RCA that is the, you know, the linking presentation, not the department. Because you know it's better than the department, because the department is broken. Deals with all other entities within the department and the department itself. So the influence might come from the RCA meeting itself. But this is the case now. You are responding to this question, not the department. Okay, we agree with the clarification.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm just raising this concept, but it doesn't take okay, the next one.
Thank you, Chair. The next comment again in respect of the criteria for appointment of the members of the tribunal, that they must in addition include legal practitioners with legal qualification. Our submission in this respect is, Chairperson, as it is, we do not think that there's a need to be able to amend the bill because the provision itself does not render any legal practitioner ineligible to be a member of the tribunal. And again, as being indicated in the provision, it becomes a ministerial process that will be supported by the department. So we have the comfort that the people that will be appointed to the tribunal will have the necessary qualifications, skills, competence, and qualifications in that respect. It is not more, it is not a restrictive kind of requirement.
Just look at that second, what our earlier point about the full-time caring. Because if you take a legal practitioner that is not full-time, there's going to be conflict of interest. But we leave it to the minister to look at how exactly he's going to manage that. We understand the explanation. The question, the point that we were trying to make from contact is to say they mustn't be disqualified if they have.
So we move on to
the next one. The next one, Chairperson, the comment is more an advisory that cautions whether 6 months will be sufficient time to prepare for the implementation of the Act. And here we indicate that 6 months is the minimum leeway that we have indicated. And the agency is acutely aware of all the attendant requirements. The good thing, Chairperson, is there is ongoing intensive interaction and involvement of all the key role players that are going to be involved in the process, from all the traffic departments in the municipalities and across the whole province. We have stratified this in a two-phase process whereby there is an outdoor national task team that meets every 2 months. And in that 2 months, they go through all the requirements that are required. Further that, it is supported by the provincial task team that the RCA, the department, the RCMC, the South African Police Service, all the local and provincial traffic departments are engaged in that. Other stakeholders that are required also get deeply involved in that, particularly for the service of documents, you've got the South African Post Office being represented. When the amendment bill is finally promulgated and the request for the president to assent onto it, we then are going to be stepping it up a gear to ensure that the preparations that have been required, everybody else is now fully up to date. So it is a minimum of 6 months that we're looking at to ensure that everybody else do the last required dry run.
And clarify 6 months is the minimum. So if there are any other challenges, then it can be extended. The next one?
The next one, Chairperson, deals with the differentiation between citizens and non-citizens that may be inconsistent with constitutional rights and equality. We are thankful for that because this has been one of the deeply engaging points that needed clarification, that in terms of our constitutional framework, there is no differentiation between a citizen or a non-citizen.
And the ARPTOP Act is one of those pieces of legislation that further solidifies this. However, it is important for us to give further information in respect of the practical implications of it. In a case where an infringer commits an infringement, any traffic violation, we have emphasized that the ARPTOP process automatically provides leeway for a person to exercise one of the five options there. And they've got their rights being broken down into exercising them into blocks of 32 days. Supposing in a practical case, chairperson, we have an infringer that comes from the United Kingdom and another one that comes from Botswana, and they commit an infringement on day number one, and on day number 22, they go out of the country without having taken care of the outstanding infringement. They may seem like they're getting scot-free, but in fact they're not. Especially with electronic service of documents, we'll be able to follow up and serve the notices to those infringers wherever they are. The second point is, if the 32-day period comes and they have not taken care of their outstanding infringement, it will get elevated to the following phases. It may seem that we would have lost that case, but indeed we would not have, because at any given point when those people return back into the country, the database where the infringements are captured is called the National Contravention Register. That is developed on a modular base anchored on the Electronic National Traffic Information System, distributed throughout the whole country, and also with the engagement of the various entities represented in the Border Management Agency. The latest is distributed throughout the whole country at every one of the border posts. When an infringer leaves, we will be able to have access onto that information. When they come back, we envisage it is going to be one of the mechanisms that we make it a standard process to verify the status of compliance with all those traffic laws, so that as part of the application process before a visa has been issued, we will check the status of compliance, whether the person has been in the country. We will then be able to find out that he's got outstanding infringement and he will need to be able to deal with it when he comes back. Unlike in other countries, such as our neighboring countries, where they issue spot fines. In respect of the ARPTO does not allow for spot fines. If you go to Botswana and you commit an infringement now, you have to deal with it. You make a payment or else you won't get out of the country or you get arrested. However, the ARPTO does not provide for that. It gives you the constitutional guarantee that you will be given enough time to be able to deal with that. So when it comes out to foreigners, any outstanding infringement will be able to serve them electronic means wherever that they are, but at the point that they return back into the country, we will be able to then collect on those outstanding infringements that they would not have dealt with on their own check.
So if
the
person never
returns,
then it's right off.
Yes, in the case that he doesn't come back at all, having served him, yes, those will be one of those that we would not be able to do much. It wouldn't make too much economic sense to try and make persistent follow-up on those ones. It's a matter of give and take. The important aspect that we emphasize is always the constitutional guarantee that is provided here.
Thank I was just thinking how the sport fight for the foreign national contradicting the constitution. State law advice, can you clarify how does the sport make differentiation contradicting the constitution if say you give the sport fight to the foreign national but not to the constitutional?
Then in terms of what
What happened in other countries' jurisdictions, we have no say on how to how they do their things. But in terms of our contributions, our countries, they use scattered in our legislative system, in our legislative system, for example, the public protectors, citizens of the country, there are other offices that emphasize that if you want to qualify for a certain office, you have to be a citizen of the country. Chair, it may amount to a discrimination that may be justifiable in an open and democratic society, Chair. For us, for South Africa to say, no, this particular position must be held by a citizen. Therefore, that discrimination, Chair, in my view, is not unconstitutional, Chair, because it is aligned to our processes, Chair. It may sound discriminatory, Chair, but in my view, it is justifiable in a open and democratic society, Chair, as provided in terms of 1736 of the Constitution.
So if you may have a spot fund for the foreigners now.
Definitely, yes. If there are two systems in the country for foreigners and another system for citizens, it may be problematic. Yeah. It may be problematic. Constitutional.
That was the last day with regard to Caltech. So we go to the next topic, Mpumalanga.
Thank you, Jeff. The first point made by Mpumalanga is related to clause number 13 on the demerit point. The demerit point will have a negative impact on the livelihood of ordinary citizens. I think this is also part of the submission that was made by the Eastern Cape, and we're grateful to the Honorable Makuba. I think the comment that he made in the previous sitting is spot on, because here we also just emphasize the point that demerit points are introduced to discourage contravention of road traffic laws. And in essence, anyone that complies with the law does not have anything to fear. We have a responsibility as government to ensure that we protect the lives of ordinary citizens and we encourage people to be able to comply with all road traffic laws.
Any comments, please? Okay. The next one.
The next one relates to public awareness. We are grateful. Yes, we agree and accept the proposal. Chairperson, we give confirmation that the ASEA continues to disseminate educational material to empower all the road users in respect of it. Our intention is to massify this as much as possible and using all types of platforms, static, digital platforms, and community engagement. And we give confirmation that we will continue even after after it's been rolled out throughout the country. The education and empowerment of road users can never come to a position where we say we have achieved it now. It is going to be ongoing, and we're grateful for that encouragement to be able to do.
Comment? Other response? So we are great.
Said the same thing about non-disability of peril. Remember the comment.
Yes.
No, we still don't have our end.
I do compare with the member that these are comments that were made, and the confirmation that we give of our intention to continue to empower people can never come to a position where we say we have achieved. The next one, in terms of the pilot phase, the comment that has been made is that being piloted in housing, there is perfect infrastructure. And here we indicate that Chairperson, in fact, the municipalities of Johannesburg and Tshwane being chosen was mainly on the basis of the margin of both metros. And specifically in terms of the population of vehicles and the population of drivers in that. We want to emphasize that those municipalities that are supposedly not the rich municipalities, the municipalities that supposedly do not have such great infrastructure, they are the ones that tend to benefit the most out of the ARPU effect. Because if I may take a practical example, Chair, if I am going to attend a funeral of one of my cousins who lives in Makado in Limpopo, and I get caught on the wrong side of the law, I may not have any business going to Makado for the next 7 or 8 years. And in a lot of times, it becomes difficult for that issuing authority to try and dispatch the related resources to follow up on the outstanding infringement. But in terms of the ARTO, you've got all the processes that are standardized and replicated throughout the whole country. And to that extent, you make it much easier for any infringer to engage in the process. And we're not talking just about the payment of it. We're talking about exercising all the elective options, whether to challenge it or to nominate a driver, but to indicate whatever that they want. So for those authorities that do not have the greatest resources, they've got the benefit of the economies of scale, because from any point in the country, one can go to any traffic department. But firstly, the database where everything is captured is centralized and distributed across the whole country. So it empowers road users to exercise their rights, their responsibilities at any given point. And whenever there is any payment that has been made, it automatically is going to get dispersed to the issuing authority that originated the infringement in the first instance. So there is actually greater benefit that will be accruing to all the issuing authorities, irrespective of the status of the infrastructure that they have got in their jurisdiction.
Okay. The last one in Mpumalanga.
The last one, Chairperson, deals with the corruption by traffic officers that is not addressed in the bill. Here we indicate that corruption is not dealt with here as a primary object of the law, but more on road safety. However, in terms of the prevention of combating corrupt activities, any form of corruption will be prosecuted in terms of the criminal procedure. Any act of corruption in itself have got to be reported, and we give confirmation that this is one of the key priority areas of our sister agency, the Road Traffic Management Corporation. And they have already started showing some good progress, some good successes in terms of bribery and corruption within the road traffic management space. The last case that was also reported was just last week on Wednesday. So they will continue to be able to deal with that. However, for what it's worth, we can also indicate some of the benefits that have been provided by the ARTO implementation itself. We recognize in the main that it always takes 2 to 10 when it comes up to corruption. It needs one that is willing to offer a bribe and another one that is willing to accept the bribe and jointly to achieve the intended purpose of circumventing the law of legal provisions that have been made. The contribution that will be made in respect of the ARTO process, especially with the primary point, we can give an example that there is no law enforcement officer that will have access onto the demerit points of infringers when they are out on the road. Because if I, as a traffic officer, can have access, then it means the possibility of the temptation to engage in unsavory behavior gets tremendously increased. And therefore, you don't want to subject infringers unnecessarily to law enforcement officers that may be tempted, because a fine that could be worth 2,000 rand, because I'm sitting at the threshold of the demerit point, might automatically now be worth 10,000 or 20,000, because if I don't cooperate, I may lose my driving license or getting suspended. So as a contribution that the ARTO makes to eliminate fraud and corruption, we would, as one of the mechanisms, eliminate that ability for somebody to access the demerit points in that respect. But this is something that's been dealt with in the Criminal Procedure Act. We confirm the RCMC has got it as one of its main priority areas.
That was the last formality. We now go to KwaZulu-Natal. Can I suggest that if there are sections that have been taken care of, you know, in the presentation, you don't have to again go through there. I see in case there's the issue of the decision of an infringer, it's coming again. But we have already dealt with that. So I suggest that you see those that we have dealt with. But also, I see we're running out of time again. If perhaps you can just stick to your responses and not get better motivated and make examples so that we. So I want to suggest that don't deal with the issue of the definition. With regard to the infringer, for the already there with you. Yeah.
Can I, in addition, with appreciation for what you said, could I also maybe propose, because Northern Cape has made the effort to be here, shouldn't we now go to Northern Cape and come back to Cape and
make
this
change? Okay. Okay,
you
go to page 21.
Page 21.
But also, if there are areas that they have been covered in terms of the responsive area, you don't have to deal with those.
May I request for a council break, please? My colleague Chairperson will continue with that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think our response will actually follow. Page 21, the order that you actually suggested that we actually don't repeat the reports that you've made. So I'll make the same observation about Northern Cape, the first proposal that they made, that the 32-day period for enforcement order should be extended. I think I'll go back to the analysis that the CEO made earlier about the time frames that are already provided, that they're actually quite sufficient. I think when we get to the enforcement order, you already have 96 days. So really there's no need to extend that. The other issue about the regulations to place to prevent use of suspended licenses, I think we made that response as well earlier, that we actually made a penal provision for that behavior to be classified as an offense. And also the issue of the taking the administration of traffic fines out of court. I think the issue here that when we take it out of the court system, it will lead to corruption. I think it's a different point. But how it's being answered is the fact that the adjudication officers, which are dealing with the first round of adjudication, of the representations by the infringers, is dealt with by adjudication officers which are deemed to be independent. And if you further go to the structure of the tribunal, also the independence is also entrenched. So then we'll go back to the point that the CEO made in response to the issues of corruption, that we just need to have systems in place to actually deal with the corruption, and also the corruption when they happen, you should have the mechanisms then to report them in terms of whistleblowing.
Then allow members to comment.
Okay.
Because we need to take them one by one. We just go back to the issue of the 32-day period. Any comments? Section 20 of the Act. So we agree with the explanation. The next one, the regulation should be put in place to prevent use of suspended licenses. The response is that that's processing. Agreed. Okay. The next one is taking administration traffic fines out of court. The response that's provided there. You agree with
Yeah, the issue of the disadvantages that are going to be occasioned by the developer system, I think the point has already been made by the CEO in terms of the balancing of the interest, competitive interest. The issue of the consultation, I think it came from Umalala, and the CEO responded in terms of the public government campaigns that the agency is going to be instituting. The issue around the budget provision, the proposal has been noted. The CFO, I'm sure, can respond to that. But I think he's done an analysis of the costs that are going to occasion the rollout of auditorship and the funding model, and I'm sure she's got a tax allocation plan for that. See if we're going to answer to you. Okay, sure. The issue that the department should conduct a research on road user behavior and fatalities, I think here we actually agree to the proposal, and that the RTIA and the RTNC will continue to conduct a research on the road user behavior.
In fact,
the point here that I need to emphasize on the last point is that the approach also to the regime of the demerit point is actually going to be driven by the road safety report, the first season road safety report. That you say, what you need to do is that you need to review the amount of demerit that are levied on every infringement based on the patterns of insanity. So the people will know that, you know, if this year we have a pattern of the commission of certain infringements, so then what you need to do then is to discourage, in terms of discouraging of the behavior of infringements, that you put more and more demand points on those infringements that are showing a certain pattern. So the people then will know that, you know, if I commit this infringement, then they are going to carry more and more demerit points. So that's the approach that we're going to be taking. And we'll work with RTNC in that regard, because they are the ones who deal with the road safety statistics and the management of the infringement at the very important level.
Are there any comments on the page 22 on all the items?
I think that's why the issue of the avoidance of the establishment of multiple entities, I think the point has been noted. Except that the tribunal will actually have to be established as an autonomous center. So it's actually unavoidable that there would be a creation of an entity called the tribunal. The point comes from the next one, is the issue, the concern that the tribunal is going to be, the authority is going to be an outsourcing mechanism by government of its own function. The point that needs to be made here is that the authority has always been an entity of the Department of Transport. It does perform as a public entity the functions, the specialized functions of the Department of Transport. And I don't know if we need to respond much more than that.
Because the only difference is that the only thing there is the authority. It was the agency, and now the authority is all in the same group. So it's not an issue of outsourcing the one of the masters. So here comes the case, because that's the question of outsourcing that those functions are already there, but it was called agency, but now it's called the authority. One of the masters.
Chair, chair to make 2 points on the procedure. So one is to say that letter is not from Posada, it's from now. It's an email from now. But also, chair, we as a committee will have to be vigilant on this. We can't follow a process where we say make representations to Parliament, we have public hearings, and when we have public hearings, we then get letters coming from provinces with public hearings. As far as I'm concerned, chair, that letter should not have any weight.
Yeah. So we're dealing with provinces. Those matters that are raised by stakeholders within the provinces, they should then form part of the report of the provinces in terms of the processes that they follow in terms of the public hearing. Not just a public submission by a stakeholder in a province. So, but I think also from the side of the office, from the secretary, we only accept submissions from provinces with regard to Section 76. But there's another process where then we allow individuals and stakeholders to make submissions when we have a Parliament public hearing. We did have Parliament public hearing where individual organizations, not provinces, but individual organizations submitted their submissions. We dealt with that and considered that the RTA is connected to those responses. So, because that is not on the House, it's not being submitted there. But I know the National Assembly of the Portugal Community, they did make submissions last night. But also, the other organizations cannot at this stage when they deal with negotiating money, then they submit the submissions as individuals. There is an opportunity for all organizations to submit their own. For example, now we will, next week we'll be dealing with the, we'll have public hearings next week on Tuesday. No, not next week, on the 4th of September. We'll be dealing with the public hearings here in Parliament on the National Land Transport Bill. So organizations, individuals are allowed to make submissions to Parliament. And then we can consider those. Once we've done with that, then provinces will also be coming back with their own negotiating mandate. I know this week some permanent delegates will be going to their provinces to brief their provinces on the national transport bill. Fortunately, my province has already gone through that process. And then when then they come back for negotiating money, we will only be dealing with their provincial money, negotiating money. But also, we will then send to the province the position of the individual organization that made the submission, so that the provinces may also consider the input of those provinces, coming of those organizations. I've seen in the report of provinces that some of the organizations that made submissions here in the in Parliament public process, they also attended some provincial public hearings, for instance, outer. I saw recently they attended one of the public hearings that we need to see. So some of them use all these platforms. For instance, after it's been to the National Assembly for the Republic when they had public hearings, they also came to the National Council of Provinces, the committee to make their presentation. They are showing the provinces that they also went to the provinces. So they using all these platforms to their public. So the point that they are making is that then when we deal with negotiating money, we don't deal with individual organizations, we deal with the problem. So even
Yes, that was not supposed to have happened.
We are not going to deal with it today.
We, but if it is contained in the negotiating money of KZN as a problem, we will then consider that, but not the position of South African states they made their input in the problem. But then if the province is convinced by their input in the postural committee, then they should include it as a provincial policy, not now as a transport policy.
Okay.
The possibility. But then as a SA transport, SA taxi, they were free to make their input as an organization to the play committee, public hearing process with the APARA. As they are even now, are invited to make their services on the national land transport which will be considering on the 4th of September. But also when the provinces are having their own public hearing, they are also free to attend on the public hearing and put their input. And then those then will be contained in the report of the province. And if
the proposal was on the cancellation of the infringements that are committed before the implementation of the Act. Our response is that means that approach would actually advance on such an approach, because that would be sort of be defeating the objectives of road safety. We've already made a transitional mechanism within Section 35 of the Act that any offences or infringements that you committed before the commencement of the act of program in a particular province will actually then be finalized within the framework of the CPA, the criminal procedure, and then from there that program, that particular province then will migrate to the ASTA program. The issue of the engagement of SAPO, what we can confirm is that SAPO has actually always been a player since the government of ALTO. We've constantly engaged with them, and then we signed an SLA with them as well. So they are actually they've always been on board in our process.
That allow members to make training on the issue of the transitional policy, those improvements that we committed before the implementation of the act. Any comments on that? Could I agree with that explanation? Okay. And also the issue of the adaptive cost of working explanation. Could I agree with that?
Yeah, the proposal was that maybe the concern was that our electronic services in the bill may be inconsistent with the actual the electronic communications and transmission act. Our response is that we've actually ensured that our electronic services are actually aligned to the section 19 subsection 4 of ECTA. And also, we actually received an extensive legal opinion to this end. And we're quite confident that there is a proper alignment between what you're proposing in the bill and the provisions of the Act. So the next concern on the proposal of on the blockage of licenses and permits that that they may hinder the compliance with other legal obligations. Maybe one can make a practical example that you know when you are abroad, you know when you can't get your license issued or the permit, but however you can complete the administrative transaction, so you can pay for that particular license or renew that license or the permit. The only activity that you cannot finalize is actually getting that license issued to you. But in the image, it will be registered as having been paid. Okay, the issue of the jurisdiction of the terminal, I think the CEO has actually made responses to this particular point, that the expansion on the scale of the terminal is actually going to be driven by the needs of its services, and that initially when it starts it's going to be a mobile platform, and then as and when we observe the patterns of usage of the services of the terminal, the decision will be made whether then the terminal should be resident or permanently resident in a particular province. So in other words, then that you can create the organic expansion of the structure of the province of the terminal. The issue of the prescription laws, I think the CEO has actually clarified that point, that the prescription actually occurs when there is an inherent prescription method within the Act. You know that you need to comply with certain timelines that are provided from the Act. So when those timelines are complied with, they actually create a prescription. So in other words, if the agency or the authority doesn't comply with its own timelines, then that particular infringement will actually last.
Or we have to do the explanation. I think it's a bit of a international meeting of the tribunal to court. There's an inquiry in regarding that. Agreed. The issue of the law of prostitution, I already indicated that we dealt with it when we were dealing with the extension. So we're going back now to KZM on page 15. Remember, there was a request that we should that is not in case first. Now we go back to case affair.
Thank you, Chair. Case that ends.
I had also indicated that we have dealt with the first part on the definition. So you don't have to deal with that one on page 15. I also suspect that this issue of blockage of the license is the one that your colleague has responded to. So we did that one as well. So perhaps maybe we can start on the threshold, section 29.
Thank you, Jeff. Yes, indeed. The comment that has been made is for increase in terms of the demerit point and the threshold. This is determined by Regulation 24 of the APTA regulations. We can confirm that there has been quite substantive input that has been made, and the threshold of the demerit point system will be increased. And this is something that will be included in the regulations, because the empowerment of Section 24 and 25 of the Act is in Regulation 24. I cannot say how much the demerit point will be increased by, but I can safely say that it will be increased for practical considerations, Chair.
Agree with the explanation?
We accept the proposal that says the issuance of infringement notices should be systematically captured. We had over the years made proposals in respect of it, and the extent to which we are able to provide for electronic capturing of the notices, it provides automatic benefits, because you would have the information automatically captured, uploaded, and available onto the National Contravention Register. It is something that we have already made progress on outside of this whole process, because it's a matter of practical consideration. So we are grateful, and we do accept the proposal, Chair. For the purposes of the bill, there is no need to make any amendments. It is a practical operational matter that we already made progress on.
I'm glad that you clarified that, but when you say you accept, then in my mind you that whether you want the aspect to be amended. So I'm glad that you are explaining it well. That there is no need to make an operational matter. Agree? The explanation? The next one.
Yes, Mr. Chairperson, the proposal here is that operators find it difficult to trace responsible drivers, and the drivers of fleet vehicles, in essence, are employees of fleet companies, and they should be able to easily trace this. The reason for that is, as the Honorable Marco mentioned in the previous session. Firstly, anything to do with a motor vehicle is the responsibility of the owner. And we've clarified that point, that one of the challenges that we have is the fact that whatever happens to that motor vehicle, the owner needs to be able to take charge. And we had an exception when a submission was made on any infringement that could have been committed where the owner did not give any consent. And we have agreed that is adequately taken care of in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act. However, it is a duty that has been placed by the National Road Traffic Act on an owner of a vehicle to know who they are letting the vehicle be driven by. Because if they give the vehicle to be driven by somebody who doesn't have a driving license, for example, they are already committing a violation. And so, therefore, it is something that is inexcusable for an operator or an owner of a vehicle to let their vehicle be driven by somebody else that they have not verified. It is a requirement that they need to. So in this respect, we do not accept the proposal, and we also put it to the committee that there is no need to effect any changes in respect of the deal.
Okay. Next one.
Notification to collect registered mail to be traced. This honorable chairperson, the South African Post Office, their services include the service of documents to registered mail. And it is this nature of a registered item that becomes traceable. We have given further confirmation that it is going to be a much more easier process with the addition of the other platform, where we're talking about electronic platforms, and we give assurance that such electronic service of documents will automatically come with a verifiable confirmatory date stamp that can stand in a court of law, and also something that is in compliance with Section 194 of the Electronic Communication and Transactions Act. For purposes of the bill, we move that there is no need to effect any changes. It is adequately covered by the CTA provisions for that type of service there. The next one, in respect of issuing of warrants, says issuing of warrants of execution is not acceptable. We fully concur and we give confirmation that this is one of the sections that have already been repealed, together with the supporting section, section 12, as well as section 22, which becomes consequential amendment anchored on section 21. Chairperson, the next one deals with demerit points. The contention is suspending licenses will increase unemployment. As indicated, we are grateful for the manner in which the Honorable Makoya has captured it in the previous one, because I think we cannot overemphasize it more, that this is about road safety, it's about saving people's lives, and anybody that does not comply with the law must be able to face the consequences. We move that the suspension of licenses is used as a deterrent for those that do not want to be able to comply with the law. In respect of increase of unemployment, we take a completely different view, because anybody that complies with the law does not have anything to fear about the after. For effecting any changes onto the bill, we move there is no need to effect any changes. This is the end for KZN Chair. To the northwest, similar to only demerit one section, clause number 13, wanting to find out how the demerit points are going to be working. It simply means most of the traffic violations have got the number of demerit points that are allocated. And this is something that is objective, that is published under regulation, under Schedule 3 of the regulation. When one commits a violation that carries demerit points, those demerit points will be allocated once that person accepts that they were wrong. And they will accept that they were wrong by making a payment, or when they have not taken any action and tried to run away from the process. So it is only those demerit points that will be applicable. However, there are certain violations that do not carry demerit points whatsoever. So as you accumulate demerit points by committing more violations, you then have your record with those points added. Once they reach 12, exceed 12, then the driving license gets suspended for a period of 3 months for every point that one is over the threshold. Interactively, one sits the disqualification period, after 3 months, they get reduced by 1 point every time. And then you will be able to find that person's record under the threshold of 12, and they are able to be registered within the driving force. The next one, I will skip. I've already dealt with the implementation of the demerit points leading to job losses, Chair. Section 15 is the next one. What would be the option available to infringer if they are unsatisfied about the decision of the appeals tribunal? In that respect, we look at the new insertion that will replace the way that Section 29J is then incorporated in the bill. We are grateful that the committee has accepted that because then it gives us an opportunity to protect people's financial abilities, that they will not go to the High Court, but instead we are now introducing the magistrate so that they can be able to subject them for a review in that. That is the point already accepted by the committee. As I said, as we move to rehabilitation programs on clause number 2H, that eventually the infringer is going to take advantage of the rehabilitation programs and they want to find out who will be responsible for the program. In essence, we're saying infringers will only be allowed access to the program once a year because it is not a matter of making that provision that if one infringes as much as they want, they can quickly dispense with the demerit point. It is also going to be a joint contributory program depending on the types of the nature of it. Part of it will be subsidized and the other will have a contributory payment that has been made by the infringer themselves. The whole issue about the rehabilitation program is to try and change the behavior and the attitude of the infringers so that they recognize what their rights and their responsibilities are shared. The next one deals with the primary point. I have indicated that it's an interactive process, Chair, that will reduce the number of primary points by one for every 3 months that an infringer goes without committing infringement or by sitting the disqualification period. So it becomes interactive in the sense that you can have them increase if one commits violations or you have them increase if there is no violation that have been committed. The next one, Chair, we have already answered it. The traffic violations that can be made one, every single one of them are detailed in Schedule 3 of the outdoor regulations that categorize them. There is no need to effect any changes. Thank you, Jeff. The report starts on page number 20. The first question, whose responsibility is it to deal with infringement that has been issued in terms of the act? Here we say it depends on the nature of the infringement notice that has been issued. After one chapter refers to handwritten notices, where an officer stops one by the side of the road and they give it to you physically. After twos and after threes, those are the electronically generated ones. So a violation has been detected at a given point and subsequent there you will find the notice that would have been issued. What the responsibility is it to deal with that? The after one notice, remember it is going to be a driver related infringement because the officer stopped me, I was driving excessively, I was speeding, or I overtook on a barrier line. So it is the driver that will deal with that. The electronically generated one, they get issued to the owner or to the operator. So it becomes a vehicle-related infringement in that instance, or if it is a driver-related infringement, the owner must then exercise the elective option of nominating the person that was in charge of the vehicle at the time of the infringement has been committed. In essence, it depends on whether the categorization is a vehicle-related infringement or is a driver-related infringement. And that's how it gets dealt with.
The only difference between before was the issue of how we could recruit the foreign missionary and prison issue. All other issues are going to address the if you agree, maybe the CEO can go directly to the, because the hope is mostly affected because of his challenge towards the neighboring Sunday country.
Well, even that one has been addressed.
Yeah,
I'd say
he's
not
the only
people.
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree with you on that. So I think what we should get in, because that's the problem on the last one, because we dealt with the northern team. So perhaps what you could refer to there from yourself is the regulation. So that members, I don't know if they are on your website, but if not, if you can send them to the committee secretary, so that they are submitted to members of the process. So the what we be having from here now is we in the fourth term, the third term, and towards the end of the September, we're going to go to a conference period and come back on the 8th, on the week of the 8th of October. But the whole of September won't be able to deal with the after, because we'll be dealing with other legislation, but also there are other programs of the NCOP between the parliament, the people of the country, and all that. So, in the fourth term, that's when we will be then dealing with the final funding. But I was taking the program,
thank you, Chair. For the record, Chair, I just want to correct something. The CEO of ASTIA said we will replace Section 29J, clause 29J in totality. Chair, we cannot do that. We're going to add a section that deals with the review, because the review of a decision is limited only to procedural fairness, and Patrick is a list of what you can, the reasons that you can take a matter to review. We still need to retain the right to appeal the decision of the magistrate court. Well, my suggestion was that we also, instead of saying you can appeal to the high court, we give the tribunal a lower status so that you can appeal to the magistrate court. So if a person is very unhappy with the decision of the tribunal, you can still appeal. So the one doesn't replace the other, or the one doesn't take away the other. So you can still review and then you can still appeal the decision. Thank you, Chair. That's the only thing that I wanted to clarify.
Can I ask you also about the end of the process for the official mandate? I mean, to the final mandate, to start with the end of the season. How can we perform to the member of the aware of the process?
Chair, non-security also correct me if I'm wrong. My understanding of the process is that we're going to have a civic and the people which will be taken to provinces for final mandates. That's how I understand the process. Unless I am so wrong, then she can also correct me. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. You'll both of you didn't advise us after you contacted one another. So maybe let's not open it for the meeting now. But before the Panama, we should be aware of the processes and the information and documents that would be required by members for Panama. I want to, before I thank everybody, I'm told that, okay.
Chair, I'm sorry, but in my earlier contribution, I did indicate that I'd like to say something in the concluding part of the very, Chair. The one is to raise a question to the department. I don't see anybody from the department yet. But you raise the question anyway. Chair, it's quite apparent that if we want this legislation to work, there are certain things that we need to do. Now, others may add. The one of them is to raise awareness, particularly amongst the taxi associations. Does the department have a plan in that regard? My second point is, Chair, is it affordable to produce a type of brochure or a booklet that is easy to understand? Mm-hmm. What for me was quite hair-raising, Chair, was that even our colleagues within the provincial legislature are having difficulty explaining this. Now, we can't possibly know every piece of legislation. But if citizens then come to a provincial office, provincial legislature, they have a booklet that they can give that enough. Can the department do that? My third one is, Chair, can the department tell us what it is on the radio talk shows? When we introduce this legislation, it's going to be important that we let people know the legislation is there and we have consequences. The penultimate one is, Chair, that I love it so much when I hear about the programs that the Department of Transport is doing at schools. Are they going to involve the learners also at schools in terms of understanding this? And I'm not only talking about learner drivers. But then I'm saying that if I was in the department and I had the authority to issue licenses to learner drivers, I would raise questions from this legislation to the learner driver. I mean, are you aware how many demerit points you have before your license will be taken away? My final point would just be to make a question. It comes out in the questions of KwaZulu-Natal, but also in my engagement with many other people, particularly within the taxi industry. The question is, what happens if my demerit point has grown to the effect where my driver's license becomes invalid? Will the department take it back? And then, KwaZulu-Natal raises the question, how do I know my driver's license is going to be saved back? And how will I get it back again? Because we know in many municipal setups, it is rather frustrating to see how long people have to be delayed to receive the driver's license. Can the department just work out something there to ensure that we're not going to cause unnecessary inconvenience to those whose licenses might be confiscated? Thank you, Chair. I'm not asking for the answers now, Chair, but we can provide it to us at an opportune time.
Okay, I think the response is, I agree with you that you may not respond now, because you never know whether we might reject the whole thing. So, because we still have to deal with the panel mandate and also deal with close by close on the TV itself. So my throat is out with the wind. But even if we do that, it means therefore the NA must also say something about it, and then go to the mediation process and all that stuff. Yeah, so there's still a long way. somebody sent a long time ago on Facebook indicating that if you feed how many points, how much you feed, and also how many points you take that take and all that stuff. But I'm sure that you contain the regulation. So it's never the system of the regulation. So that they know the tools and all that. No, I'm calculating how to my colleague also that was an influencer during the weekend, something of another media. It was an illness in the region of another political party. This was the operation. There was a lot of points that would have been detected from the we just want to give the first with the minutes before we release everyone. The reason is that the paper is that is prepared for everyone. So we don't want to you to eat alone while we eat with the minutes. So by the time we finish with the minutes, we will finish with the so let's say could you deal with the minutes and so that we can all take care of that. And then I thank everybody for coming. Again, honourable members, there are 10 sets of minutes. They start from the 27th of June. The next one is on the 7th of August. And then the last one is on the 14th. That was last week. Can we... Do we have copies in front of us?
No.
We don't?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh. And the Erasmus, can you make sure that members have a copy?
No,
the electronic one.
The request from the members is in the 21st.
Okay. No, then you have people wanted to invite you to lunch, but then if you don't want to leave now, then. No, you can help yourself on talking what we then continue with the minutes. Yeah, you can help yourself. Members, can we deal with the minutes of the 27th of June? We do them page by page. Page 1, any corrections or omissions? If not, page 2. Corrections, omissions. Check if your names have been spelled correctly. Page 3. Page 4, which is the last page. And I have a mover in the second for the adoption of minute. Those who were in the last minute, and I will tell it, can we have a second there? So that's my preference in the last meeting. Another market will that. Second day. The next step. Oh, no, now you have an acknowledgement, yes, can't second.
Me?
Yeah. You are under on the 27th of June. Another test while you are there.
Oh,
can you help us? Another the next test of Tuesday, the 7th of August. I know you are there on our material. And that's why you can let's look if there are any. accepting the commission, page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, and the last page, page 6. Can we have a number? Second time? Number Mathieu Goulart, you can raise your hand now. Okay. It's going through.
Which identity?
The 7th of August.
Yeah.
The moment. The guy that brought it from the schedule. The last test of minutes, it had the Tuesday 14th August last week. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3, page 4, to the last page. Can we have a mover a second? Honorable Kelso, Honorable Matthew. That was the last set of minutes. After bring us to the end of the meeting, I would like to thank everybody for attending. You all, thank you for attending the meeting. So we'll see on another meeting, the final Monday. You're not sure exactly when you were told by the committee secretary that in September there's no meeting that will be taking for the after. What that means that is a public hearing on the 14th of in September. But also in that system, what will also be dealing with is the national land transport, the negotiating market. Sometimes there are different programs, but then you will have to check with the committee program. Could be that in the next day. Sometimes we make changes when we send the program to the professional. The House Representative on Committee, when we send another one, they don't consider the second one, but then they present in the program committee, the one that we have already made changes for. So sometimes there are those mistakes, but then the committee secretary will check with the committee opening program whether we have this schedule. Sometime in October. But the one in front of me doesn't say anything about the final money or after. Thank you very much also to the PLO from the department and also other members from the department and RCA. Thank you, Mr. Williams from SATEC for coming. And everybody else. Yeah, we special thanks also to the provinces that will come, the team, and the another team. Members will see each other. We have a dinner this afternoon to consider the Lebanon, the famous National Minimum Wage. We'll be considering it this afternoon. As well as other the labor relations amendment, the commission of amendment, and the labor law policy on the leave, paternity leave. Yeah, so we'll be considering it. But also there's a debate after that this afternoon. Tomorrow we don't have a committee. We have the TDO conference at 249 in the new week. I don't know, Honorable Mako, if there's any announcement with regard to the NEF. they have to publish.
Yeah, the fact I have just written to me here, he indicates that for members who confirmed that they will attend, we are just waiting on the political approval to be done, and he will then revert to you.
Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.